And a good Friday morning to you. Welcome to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the podcast with you 24/7 wherever you get your shows. Just search for the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app or listen online at nickcraig.com. Well, we had a busy night in the United States Senate as senators were there late in the overnight hours into the early hours of this morning dealing with budget and spending in regards to, well, the federal government. Senate Republicans beat the House, their counterparts, in the early morning hours today, officially passing their preferred budget resolution to tackle some of President Donald Trump's promises, such as securing the southern border. After hours of back-to-back voting on Democrat amendments, which, as you can imagine, did not go anywhere because Democrats are not in control in the Senate. They're not controlling in the House either. So in an attempt to slow down the process, in an attempt to slow walk, again, we've seen this a lot over the last couple of weeks, in an attempt to slow walk the president's agenda, gum up government, make everything and bring it all to a screeching halt, Democrats brought forward hours worth of amendments. All of those failed, as you can imagine. And when the rubber met the road very early this Friday morning, well, the measure passed by a vote of 52-48, with Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky being the only Republican to vote against it. The Senate voted on various amendments and points of order for nearly 10 hours yesterday and into the early hours of this morning, considering dozens of them from the floor. Ultimately, two Republican-led amendments were adopted. John Thune, who is the Senate Majority Leader, told reporters yesterday before the vote took place, quote, "This particular budget resolution addressing the president's priorities, top priorities, which is securing the border and as well as implementing and putting in place his immigration policies, rebuilding our military and creating energy dominance for this country. The leader and Republicans in the upper chamber started to move forward with all of the important budget reconciliation processes earlier this month, pushing their preferred plan through a key committee and clearing a procedural hurdle. The move comes despite House Republicans being expected to take the lead on passing a budget bill first. Thune and Senate Budget Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham of South Carolina also pressed on even after Trump came out in support of the House proposals endorsing it earlier this week on Truth Social. After its passage just a couple of hours ago, Lindsey Graham said in a statement, quote, "As Senate Budget Committee Chairman, I am incredibly pleased by the discipline shown by my Senate Republican colleagues to ensure that the most transformable border security bill in history can soon become reality." He said, "I hope the House can pass one big bill that meets President Trump's priorities, but this approach provides money that we needed yesterday to continue the momentum on securing our border, enforcing our immigration laws, and rebuilding our military. Time is of the essence." The decision to move forward with the Senate's alternative budget plans, which is two-pronged as approaches to the House's efforts of one big bill, you've heard that from President Trump, was blessed by Vice President J.D. Vance on Wednesday. Trump himself did not seem bothered by their efforts either, posting on Truth Social, quote, "Thank you, Majority Leader John Thune and the Republican Senate for working so hard on funding the Trump border agenda. We are setting records the likes of which have never been seen before on stopping criminal illegal aliens from entering our country. Put simply, we are delivering for the American people. Far faster and more successful than anyone thought possible. Your work on funding this effort is greatly appreciated." The Senate's procedural vote earlier in the week triggered a 50-hour debate clock that ended Thursday night. Then a marathon of votes took place. Senators on the floor, both Republicans and Democrats, were able to introduce an unlimited number of amendments, of which many received floor votes. The process forced Republicans to take many potential uncomfortable votes teed up by their Democrat colleagues. So this has officially passed in the United States Senate. we now will wait and see what the House does. There has been a lot of, as you're well aware, a big push from Trump to get a budget, get some spending bills done and dealt with. The Senate taking the lead, which is typically not the case when we look at how the government is funded and how this process typically unfolds. However, there's a lot of really good stuff in here. There are tax cuts associated. Of course, the border, immigration, those major funding programs are all in this as well. So a major win for Senate Republicans yesterday. We now await reaction from the House. I did see a post come in very early this morning, a tweet from U.S. Senator Ted Budd. He posted this on his X account at 5:11 this morning when I was in the middle of doing the Carolina Journal News Hour. This was the post from Senator Budd. Proud to have worked with my Senate GOP colleagues to pass a budget that gives President Donald Trump the tools he needs to secure the border, strengthen our military, and unleash American energy. That post coming in just a couple of hours ago, about 2 hours ago, from Senator Ted Budd here of North Carolina with the passage of this budget. So that is what we are looking at this morning. Likely to be some additional details throughout the day and over the next couple of weeks. We'll continue to track them here right here on the Nick Craig Show. Well, yesterday afternoon, it was also the U.S. Senate that was making news with a vote for the nomination of Kash Patel to be the next director of the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. He was successful in that vote, all but two Republican senators voting in favor of Kash Patel, a major win for the FBI, and I would argue a major win for the American people. We've got to take a step back here. I know things are moving incredibly quick, especially over the last 4 weeks watching Trump be in the Oval Office. Things are happening unbelievably fast. But we've got to step back for just a couple of minutes and look at some of the horrific and some of the tragic things that have come out of these three-letter agencies, specifically this morning, focusing on the FBI. The Federal Bureau of Investigation has been taken over and weaponized by bureaucratic Democrats against their political opponents. And it's not just the FBI. The IRS falls into that same description as well. Going after and auditing conservative-leading groups and charities at a much higher rate than any Democrat-affiliated groups, these three-letter agencies within the federal government have been completely taken over by what Trump and many other folks call the deep state. Like, this is what we're talking about. Unelected bureaucrats that wield an incredible amount of power within our government. These individuals are not known to the public. We don't know who they are, what their titles are, what they do. It's a black hole. And that is where the bureaucracy lives and where the swamp festers. These agencies have been unchecked for decades now. And what we've seen over the last couple of weeks with this new administration is a very keen approach to dealing with these agencies and dealing with these entities, where they are being called out, where they are being exposed, where the conversations of the past, where the political bias and the political operation of the past is over with. And having Kash Patel lead the FBI and set the agenda, set the message, set the narrative from the top is absolutely critical to this equation. We saw comments and you likely saw some pieces of his hearing, his Senate confirmation hearing that took place back a couple of weeks ago. Sounds like he's the man for the job. He's got the experience. He's paid his due or done his time in regards to working with the agency. And he is going to set a completely different standard than what we have been accustomed to. No longer using this very powerful tool of the federal government against the American people for political gains, for political wins, which unfortunately is what the FBI has become. So in reaction to this, a successful vote, all Republicans but two, Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, of course, not voting in favor of Kash Patel because, you know, why would they? They're only Republicans. We saw Democrats standing in front of the J. Edgar Hoover FBI building yesterday, losing their ever-loving minds. Here is Adam Schiff. You all know and love Adam Schiff. This is what he had to say about Kash Patel after he was successfully confirmed by the United States Senate yesterday.
This is someone we cannot trust. This is someone who lacks the character to do this job, someone who lacks the integrity to do this job. We know that. Our Republican colleagues know that. The only qualification Kash Patel has to be FBI director is that when everyone else in the first Trump administration said, no, I won't do that, that crosses moral, ethical, and legal lines, Kash Patel said, sign me up. In the first Trump administration, as we are seeing in the second, you rise to the level of your sycophancy, and no one is a bigger or more dangerous sycophant than Kash Patel. This political hack does not deserve to be in this building. He can't do the job. He won't protect the public. He will misuse the resources of the Bureau. He will weaponize it against the president's political opponents rather than the protecting the safety, the public safety of the American people.
Adam Schiff can go to hell. What the balls on this guy to stand up here and make the claim that Kash Patel does not deserve to be in this building. Hey, Adam, you guys lost. You remember what happened in November? You guys got your asses kicked in the general election. The American people rejected the bill of goods that you were trying to sell them. They are fed up with the status quo within the federal government. They are fed up with the FBI going after Catholic churches, deeming parents that go to school board meetings domestic terrorists. You guys have created this monster. You guys have created this atmosphere, and now you're getting a taste of your own medicine. Gone are the days of Democrats, and of course he makes the claim, he's going to use the FBI to go after his political opponents. You mean like you guys have done? You know, this is typical projection from the left. They weaponized the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, to go after conservatives, go after religious groups, and go after parents who were fed up and sick with their school system, with their school district, allowing men in their daughters' bathrooms. If you showed up at a school board meeting and spoke displeasure to that taking place, the FBI wanted to put you on a terror watch list, wanted to deem you a domestic terrorist for having such a wild idea that boys should not be allowed in female bathrooms, locker rooms, whatever it is within the school system. The Democrats created this in an attempt to win over the very small and minute trans community. Democrats created all of these problems for themselves. The American people rejected these premises. The American people said, this is not what we stand for. And so they elected Trump. And they gave Republicans control in the Senate and Republicans control in the House because they wanted a change. So for pencil neck Adam Schiff to stand in front of the J. Edgar Hoover building yesterday and claim that Kash Patel should not be in there, he can go to hell. This guy is the lowest of low. Adam Schiff has no morals. He is a complete and total scumbag. Absolutely no morals, is the worst kind of politician. Don't you remember him and all of his fake information in the first Trump administration? And just look at his smug face. So I hope he continues to sit and cry in front of the FBI building, because I can promise you this. The Democrats' reign and the way in which they politically operate is about, and we've already seen it over the last couple of weeks, but it's only going to get worse. It is completely getting dismantled. It is completely getting stripped away. So let's see what more insight pencil-necked, liar, loser, scumbag Adam Schiff has to say about Kash Patel. Let's take a listen to his political insight.
We will vote no. Our Republican colleagues, intimidated by this president and threats of primary challenges from MAGA world, may vote to confirm him.
Oh, they did.
But as my colleagues have said, they will have to live with that vote, be accountable for that vote, and be accountable for all the destruction that Patel does to this premier law enforcement agency.
Oh, premier law enforcement agency. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I think of the FBI, and I think of all the scandals over the last couple of years, that's the first thing that comes to my mind. Premier law enforcement agency. I hope Kash Patel does an incredible amount of damage to the FBI, because it is broken in the way it operates right now. I hope Kash Patel is like a bull in a china shop in the FBI this morning, because the leadership of that organization, the unelected bureaucrats that have turned what was a premier law enforcement agency into nothing more than a political bargaining chip for the Democrats, need to be exposed, and they are. And Kash Patel is going to, I can promise you, is going to be the worst thing that these people could ever imagine. Their reign of unchecked, politically motivated attacks and politically motivated bias is over. Democrats know that this is the case. They know what they've been doing behind the scenes. Adam Schiff, more than anybody else, the liar scumbag that he is, they know what they've done. They know it's going to be exposed. They know they can't do it anymore. So what is the response? This, what you're watching right now.
And we, us Democratic members of this Judiciary Committee, stand shoulder to shoulder with the professionals in the FBI, with law enforcement everywhere, and we wish our colleagues would do the same. And with that, let me...
You guys lost, so it doesn't really matter what you say. We won, you lost, we're in charge, you're not. We get to do what we want, you guys don't. It's really as simple as that. There's not much more to say. So that's loser Adam Schiff, and that's what he had to say. Now, how about Senator Sheldon Whitehouse? What did he have to say in regards to this? Again, was before the confirmation vote, but again, the votes were already in. Kash Patel was going to be confirmed. So let's see what Democrats had to say. Let's see what Senator Sheldon Whitehouse had to say about old Kash Patel.
Judiciary Committee, what crimes it was that he was concerned about that caused him to plead the Fifth. Kash Patel, mark my words, will cause evil in this building behind us, and Republicans who vote for him will rue that day.
Well, rue the day. Interesting. Republicans are going to rue the day. That's rather peculiar, because it seems like it is the Democrats that are having a full-blown panic attack over Kash Patel being confirmed. The same way that they had a panic attack over Pete Hegseth being confirmed. The same way that they've had panic attacks over RFK Jr. being confirmed. Ladies and gentlemen, it's hard to understand this and realize this when we're in the midst of it right now. But if things continue the way in which they have over the last couple of weeks, for the next couple of years, what you are witnessing right now is generational, once in a lifetime change in regards to the federal government. I was at the New Hanover County GOP meeting last night, the final meeting before their county convention. I had the opportunity to moderate a candidate forum, wasn't a debate, but a candidate forum between two of the incoming groups that want to run the local Republican Party. And before that, the county chairman in Nevin Carr was going through some of the wins that the Trump administration has had over the last couple of weeks. And he made the point that he never thought in his lifetime he would see some of these things come to fruition. I mean, the things that you are seeing right now, things that are being discussed and things that have already happened, are things that conservatives have been talking about for decades. It's things that Republicans have told them they were going to do for decades. But it's never materialized. Nobody's really ever had the willingness to do what's happening right now. Donald Trump is operating on a different level right now. The things that he is doing, the dismantling that he is doing to the federal government as we speak this morning, I don't think anybody in their wildest dreams thought things would be going the way that they are right now. And again, it's hard to see it when you're in the middle of it. Right? The old saying, it's sometimes hard to see the forest through the trees. You're in the middle of the forest. That's, I think, what we're living in right now in regards to generational, once-in-a-lifetime change to the federal government. It is being led by Trump. It is being led by people like Pete Hegseth, Marco Rubio, Pam Bondi, Sean Duffy, Kash Patel. These individuals are leading the generational change that our federal government not only needs, but if it doesn't happen, if things just continue going along the way that they have for decades in the past, there is a very real risk and threat to our country. From a simple security standpoint, from a long-term economic feasibility landscape, I mean, we are talking about very, very complicated matters. We are talking about very detrimental things to the future of our society, the future of our country. And the change is happening right before our eyes. Now, Democrats want to try and put up roadblocks at each and every corner. Democrats want to completely stonewall the process. It's a very bad political move. You can go and look at Trump's approval rating. Going over to Real Clear Politics this morning. Real Clear Politics is a phenomenal website for looking at polling and things of that nature. And the favorability rating for Trump is still in the green. Rasmussen does a daily political tracking of presidential approvals. They've been doing it for like 20 years now. And I want to see if they've got their poll out today. But they have been doing this for decades now. Like 20 plus years. And Donald Trump is comfortably sitting in the low to mid 50s in terms of approval. And you might say, well, that's not high. That's not a lot. Most presidents have approval ratings in the 30s and 40s. It is very odd to see and have a president be above water in regards to presidential approval. And since he has been in the Oval Office, they started doing this poll on January the 23rd for the second Trump administration. There's not been a single day in which his approval has dropped below 50. There's not been a single day that has happened. And it's just 1,500 likely individuals that are polled on this topic each and every day. So Democrats that want to block all of this, Democrats that think that this is going to be politically successful for them long term, I don't know what they're smoking. We are watching a transformative change right now in America. We are seeing I truly believe, some sort of a second American revolution that Democrats can't wrap their head around. They want to play counterculture to this. It's incredibly short-sighted. I know they need to try and get their political wins, and they need to try and, you know, hold the resistance against Trump. We've got to resist. Resist we much, as the charlatan Al Sharpton says. But I think that's very short-sighted. Because what you're seeing unfolding at the national level, it turns out, is very popular with the American people. This was a discussion on CNN earlier this week. And the individual bringing forward this poll, Harry Eaton, has to explain this to the very left-leaning CNN audience. It's fascinating to watch. Take a listen.
Donald Trump and the Republican Party has changed the electorate. What do I mean by that? Well, let's take a look at party identification, Democrats versus Republicans. You go back to 2017, 5 points more of the electorate was Democrats than Republicans. You go to 2021 when Joe Biden was starting out, look at that, 6 points more of the electorate was Democrats than Republicans. But look at what's happened in February of 2025. Look at this. Republicans, there are more Republicans in the electorate than there are Democrats. Republican plus two. So Donald Trump and the Republicans have remade the electorate. They've turned some people over from being Democrats or independents to become Republicans. New folks have entered the electorate who are more Republican leaning. And so when you combine that with the fact that Republicans are really, really behind Donald Trump, all of a sudden you get a winning recipe whereby you break the normal rules of politics and give Donald Trump that positive net approval rating when he had pretty much a consistently negative one in term number one. As I said at the beginning, he's copying Frank Sinatra, doing it my way.
Now, there you go. Quick little Sinatra reference at the end there. That's what's happening. I mean, you can look at the numbers for yourself. Trump's net approval rating, plus 84 points. This is according to, I think this was a CBS poll that was out, looking at and dealing with some of this. So when Democrats stand in front of the FBI or stand in front of USAID or the IRS or whatever building will be the Department of Education, whatever the next controversy is, the next threat to democracy that they gin up and cook up, who do they think they're talking to? The American electorate is not, again, in favor with what the Democrats are doing. Yet they continue to go down this rabbit trail. It is incredibly short-sighted. And you've got some Democrats that are starting to understand this, can see the forest actually through the trees and understand what's going on in America. I've got a very, very interesting clip from Mayor Pete Buttigieg. Yesterday, that will probably shock you. I've got that coming up, plus a very interesting report over at the New York Times. The Trump team plans deep cuts at the office that funds recovery for big disasters as the president looks at reshaping FEMA and some of their big failures. We'll have those details coming up here in just a few minutes. I want to remind you that you can get access to the show, bonus access, including show notes and more, by visiting patreon.com/Nick Craig, where you can support the show financially and get some of that bonus access, daily show notes. We will be doing a monthly Zoom call next week where we chat about the politics, kind of go round the table, talk about what's going on, what's important, what's not. All of that coming to your Patreon if you are a subscriber over there. patreon.com/Nick Craig if you are interested in supporting the show. We'll have this Buttigieg clip plus these cuts that Trump is looking to make coming up after this. You're listening to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome back to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live on this Friday morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. The New York Times has an exclusive this morning, the headline: the Trump team plans deep cuts at office that funds recovery from big disasters. And this is, of course, very much following the thread of the Trump administration and comments that you've heard from the president about the federal government and their botched, failed disaster and recovery efforts. I mean, you want a prime example? Just look here across our state. Look at our friends and our neighbors in Western North Carolina that dealt with unbelievably slow and continue unbelievably slow, useless, and ineffective disaster relief. I saw a post on X, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, an individual requested some assistance from FEMA. They had some property damage, not to their house, but to their property themselves, the property itself. Some fencing and some agricultural related things were damaged. So they went to FEMA and requested relief, which is, you know, that Federal Emergency Management Agency. It's kind of what they do. The individual's response back from FEMA, after again requesting help with like infrastructure on their property, not their house or where they live, their response back from FEMA was a 2-night hotel voucher. They didn't request housing. They requested help with structures on their property that aren't their house. And the federal government responded with giving them 2 nights at a hotel. That doesn't help fix their property at all. They didn't request shelter assistance. Yet that's what FEMA responded with. So let's go through some of these details over at the New York Times this morning. It says the Trump administration plans to all but eliminate the office that oversees American recovery from the largest disasters, raising questions about how the United States will rebuild from hurricanes, wildfires, and other calamities made worse by climate change. First sentence, we couldn't get out of the first paragraph without climate change. Just that's the setup for the article. So the wildfires in California happened because of climate change. Somehow. It wasn't the awful forest management in California. It wasn't the lack of running water at the onset of the fires. It wasn't crazy Santa Ana winds that were taking place in the area. Those were not the causes of the horrific Los Angeles wildfires. It was climate change. And how about Hurricane Helene? Worst storm to ever hit western North Carolina in well over 100 years. Some would say ever to hit that area of the state. What was the cause of that? Well, climate change. Not Mother Nature. Not the unpredictability of the Atlantic hurricane season. But climate change, according to the New York Times. Okay, let's move on. The Office of Community Planning and Development, which is part of the Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, pays to rebuild homes and other recovery efforts after the country's worst disasters, such as Hurricane Helene in North Carolina and Hurricane Milton in Florida. The administration plans to cut its staff in the office by 84%, according to a document obtained by the New York Times. The number of workers would be cut to 150 from 936 when Mr. Trump took office last month. Those cuts could slow the distribution of recovery money to North Carolina and other recent disasters, depending on how quickly they happen. Don't you love this? So the New York Times, of course, first of all, talking about climate change and then saying, well, you know, if these individuals lose their jobs, if Trump cuts 84% of this department, the disaster relief and the distribution of money could be slow. Hurricane Helene hit 7.5 months ago. You still have individuals that are waiting for a response from FEMA. How much slower can it get? That's the concern? That the relief is going to be too slow? Helene hit the state in September of last year. Not 2 weeks ago, but September. The federal government has been twiddling their thumbs and dragging their feet on federal relief for 7 months. Private charities and agencies and organizations have been the ones that have stepped up to provide relief in Western North Carolina. It sure as hell hasn't been the federal government. So, now the relief is going to be slow. Oh, okay, great. Great. So it was very efficient before. And because Trump's going to make these cuts at HUD, now all of a sudden the relief's going to be very slow. Well, we can't possibly have that. A spokeswoman for the department, Casey Lovett, said in a statement, quote, HUD is carrying out President Trump's broader efforts to restructure and streamline the federal government to serve the American people at the highest standard. The primary responsibility, this is her statement's over, back to the New York Times article. The primary responsibility for rebuilding communities after major disasters falls on the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, which helps state and local governments pay to repair or rebuild damaged roads, bridges, schools, water treatment plants, and other public infrastructure. The agency also provides money to help repair damaged homes. But some disasters are so big that they exceed FEMA's funding, or the damage doesn't fit neatly within FEMA's programs. Doesn't fit neatly within FEMA's programs. That's the issue right there. I'm positive the author of this article, who just based on the first paragraph talking about how these storms are getting worse because of climate change, does not agree with the president, does not agree with the majority of the things that you and I stand for. So he says that these disasters are bigger, the damage doesn't fit within FEMA's programs. That's exactly the issue. The red tape, the bureaucracy, the federal government, and the way that we just do things around here is the issue. That's what Trump is trying to fix. What do you mean the damage doesn't fit neatly within FEMA's programs? Well, I don't even know what that means, except for red tape and government bureaucracy. This federal agency has created a bunch of busy work for employees and has created this structure of how they do things that is inefficient and ineffective. It doesn't matter what the storm is. It doesn't matter if it's a tornado or a hurricane or a wildfire or a massive winter event. What do you mean it doesn't fit within FEMA's programs? They're the freaking Federal Emergency Management Agency. Their job is very simple. Respond to disasters like this. Respond to emergencies like Helene, like the California wildfires. There should not be neat FEMA programs. You've got to be able to check all 15 of these boxes. To hell with that. That's the issue. But I assume the author doesn't grasp that. When that happens, Congress can choose to provide additional help through a program at HUD called the Community Development Block Grant Disaster Recovery Program. That extra help from Congress can involve far greater sums than what FEMA can provide. In 2006, for example, Congress provided almost $17 billion to rebuild the Gulf Coast after Hurricanes Katrina, Rita, and Wilma. After Hurricane Sandy, Congress gave Housing and Urban Development more than $15 billion to help rebuild the Northeast. As disasters have grown far more frequent and severe, which is not true, HUD's disaster recovery program has become central to the country's strategy for coping with climate change. Huh. Coping with climate change. Okay. During the 1990s, Congress typically gave the program a few $100 million a year. You know, drop in the bucket, just a couple $100 million. Over the past decade, by contrast, Congress has often provided billions or even tens of billions annually. HUD's disaster recovery money also comes with fewer strings attached. Oh. The money is largely used to rebuild homes that were either uninsured or underinsured, which the Federal Emergency Management Agency does not pay for. It also goes towards rebuilding infrastructure that's not covered by FEMA, like private roads and bridges that were significantly damaged by Helene in North Carolina. The money can also be used for job training to help workers who employees were out of business after the disaster. So I guess my question is this. You know, reading through this article and looking at some of the details. My question is pretty simple. Why is FEMA not able to provide and administer these tasks? Why is this falling under HUD? Now, this is not a criticism of housing and urban development. But we've got FEMA. I mean, this is exactly what's wrong with the federal government. We have FEMA, which is set up to deal with these disasters. So instead of retooling FEMA to do some of these things that the author claims HUD is responsible for, like underinsured or uninsured housing, like private infrastructure, like roads and bridges, if FEMA is not capable of implementing and falling forward on these tasks, instead of just giving the money to somebody else to do the job, why don't we just retool FEMA? This is where government falls apart. They have so much bureaucracy that they built up. They go, well, we're FEMA. We don't have the ability to deal with private roads and bridges. That's not under a scope of one of our programs. That doesn't fit in one of our nice buckets that we've lined up here on a row. And instead of asking the question, why? Instead of saying, well, then change your policies, change your programs to provide this, they go, well, then let's just funnel money to HUD and HUD will be the ones dealing with it. HUD is responsible for private roads and bridges? Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense at all. HUD is responsible for paying employees that can't work because the businesses that they worked for were destroyed by the natural disaster? How does that fall under HUD? It falls under HUD because FEMA is a bloated agency that is incapable of providing the resources and services that are required. Back to the Times article. Because state and local officials are often overwhelmed by a disaster, and because of the influx of federal funds is large and quick, one of HUD's main jobs is ensuring that the money isn't lost to waste, fraud, or abuse. That includes tasks like helping states and local governments set up systems to avoid paying contractors twice, according to a former official who worked on the program. It can also mean more complicated tasks, like coordinating HUD's grants with other federal disaster programs. Housing and Urban Development's Community Planning and Development Office was already stretched thin, especially as large-scale disasters have become more frequent. On average, the HUD employees who manage disaster relief grants are each responsible for overseeing about $1 billion in grants, according to an official who worked in the office. Deep cuts to staffing levels would make it harder for HUD to prevent fraud, waste, and abuse, as if the New York Times or the Democrat writing this article gives a damn about fraud, waste, and abuse. According to two former officials familiar with the program who spoke on the condition of anonymity out of fear of retaliation. The cuts are being directed by the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, whose stated goal is to reduce fraud, waste, and abuse. The Community Planning and Development Office is responsible for managing other spending programs beyond disaster recovery. Those include paying for infrastructure upgrades like sewers and sidewalks, affordable housing programs, and projects like Meals on Wheels. Huh. A pretty interesting piece over at the New York Times. So, again, here's the takeaway from this article. FEMA is too big. FEMA is too bloated to do the simple task of providing disaster relief. So they've had to bring in other agencies like HUD to administer these programs because FEMA is too incapable to do so. Now Trump is trying to streamline federal disaster recovery, federal disaster relief, and Democrats like this author over at the New York Times are saying, well, now the process is just going to be too slow. There's going to be too much fraud, waste, and abuse. I wish an article like this was written 6 months ago or 5 months ago or 4 months ago when individuals in Western North Carolina were being kicked out of hotel rooms because FEMA was incapable of communicating with them in a timely and an efficient manner to let them know whether they'd have a place to lay their head the next night. I mean, you want to talk about government agencies not acting in an efficient manner. Why don't we just look at what's happening right now? Why don't we look at the complete and total incompetence that has come out of so many facets of our federal government? This article is absurd. The whole premise that this is only happening and is getting worse because of climate change, there's no science. There's no evidence. There's no data to back any of this up. It's nothing more than political pandering and wish casting from the left. And I obviously, having dealt with natural disasters like many of you have here in southeastern North Carolina, having talked to friends and various folks out in the western half of the state, heard those firsthand accounts of the disaster that has taken place, the complete and total lack of federal response, the slow walking of everything that's been going on. Things need to change. What we have right now is not working. You can't continue down this path without making serious changes. And I'm very grateful that Trump has put together a task force to look at how the federal government deals with emergencies and disasters in the future. You can go on X, you can go on Facebook, and you can go on YouTube and find the real life personal impact and stories of individuals that unfortunately firsthand have had to deal with the complete and total incompetence out of the federal government. They're real. They affect real people. They severely impact these individuals' lives. So Trump's cutting 84% of the staff at this HUD office? Okay, good. We've got to retool how we respond to disasters like wildfires in California and hurricanes in North Carolina. What we're doing right now doesn't work. Just doing it the way that we always have has led us to this position, has put us where we are right now, which is unresponsive results from our federal government, FEMA being the top offender of this. I'll throw a link to this full article over in the show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Well, many of the stories that we cover each and every weekday morning, it is very difficult to keep up with all of the news, especially as it's happening so rapidly. That's why I use Ground News. Ground News is an app and website that combines news from around the world in one place so that you can compare coverage. For every new news source, you can see if they have a political bias, how reliable their reporting is, and who owns them. One of the great features of Ground News is their blind spot feed that highlights news disproportionately covered by one side of the political spectrum. Get news from thousands of sources worldwide in one place and verify your information. I use Ground News every day to prep for the show. Subscribe through my link to get 40% off your Vantage subscription. That's the one I use to get unlimited access to every feature. Visit nickcraig.com/ground to learn more and save 40%. That's nickcraig.com/ground. Your subscription not only helps this show, but it also supports Ground News as they make the media landscape more transparent. Visit nickcraig.com/ground to learn more details now. Appreciate Ground News. Great website. I literally use it all the time. It got the app on my phone, have it bookmarked in my browser, use it every single morning as I'm going through and at night going through and picking up various pieces of news for the show. All right. So let's kind of regather here. I mentioned that, you know, we're talking earlier about Kash Patel, talking about how the Democrats are continuing down this rabbit hole of fighting for things and going after things and making, you know, ridiculous comments about things that are incredibly unpopular. They are, for whatever reason, digging their heels into the sand on things that are just not popular issues. Whether it's men in women's bathrooms, whether it's, you know, these weird transgender sports rules, diversity, equity, and inclusion, things that are very, very unpopular. And I'm not sure why they are continuing down this path. It's a detrimental path, but they are. At least most of them are. We heard from Adam Schiff and Senator Whitehouse earlier this morning. And they're just saying, oh, you know, Kash Patel is the worst guy that's ever existed, this, that, and the other. There are, however, some Democrats that are changing their tune. I've got a very interesting article, very interesting video clip, an audio clip for you this morning. Pete Buttigieg was speaking at an event yesterday, or 2 days ago, rather, and ripped into the Democrats as to how they're handling some of these complex issues, how they're messaging some of these topics. This was a very interesting insight from Pete Buttigieg. Take a listen to this.
A little bit of that event you described, and it was a caricature of everything that is wrong with our ability both to cohere as a party and to reach to those who don't always agree with us. And we cannot go on like that. We cannot. I also think that we believe in the values that we care about for a reason. And this is not about abandoning those values. It's about making sure we're in touch with the first principles that animate them. What do we mean when we talk about diversity? Is it caring for people's different experiences and making sure no one's mistreated because of them, which I will always fight for? Or is it making people sit through a training that looks like something out of Portlandia, which I have also experienced? And it is how Trump Republicans are made, if that comes to your workplace with the best of intentions, but doesn't actually get at what actually matters here, what's actually at stake. I think, and this might sound counterintuitive, if we were more serious about the actual values and not caught up in vocabularies and trying to cater to everybody only in terms of their particular slice of combinations of identities versus the shared project, actually, if we thought about it a little bit differently, things like diversity would be actually an example of how we reach out beyond our traditional coalition.
I'm going to stop Pete Buttigieg right there and roll this back a second. This is exactly the issue that the left has right now. Inside of their coalition, they've got all of these little subsects of groups that they have to deal with. All of these, you know, weird identity politics groups that exist with inside the Democrat Party. And they do their damnedest, because these groups are small but very loud. A small but vocal group. The Democrats have found themselves in a position where they have to pander to all of these little slices of the cake. And that has led them down this path of incredibly unpopular policy items that Pete Buttigieg is highlighting. And he mentions this, and he is absolutely correct. That is the issue that Democrats face right now. They have to pander to these small minority, or they don't have to, but they continue and choose to pander to these small groups, pander to these small minorities. And it has led them down the path to believe that it's okay to allow biological men in female locker rooms, that it is okay for men to play in women's sports. This is where it's led them. Pete Buttigieg obviously understands this is an issue. I rolled it back a little bit. Listen to what he says. This is very, very important.
Actually matters here, what's actually at stake. I think, and this might sound counterintuitive, if we were more serious about the actual values and not caught up in vocabularies and trying to cater to everybody only in terms of their particular slice of combinations of identities versus the shared project, actually, if we thought about it a little bit differently, things like diversity would be actually an example of how we reach out beyond our traditional coalition. And what I mean by that is, the opposite of diversity is uniformity. And if there's one thing I really respect about principled conservatives, even if I don't always agree with them, is that they have a horror of anything that has a whiff of being pressed into conformity by government or by society. So I would like to appeal to people who, whether it's because of a conservative or libertarian instinct or a more progressive instinct, or I would say just an American belief that part of the point of living in a country like this is you don't have to conform to what other people demand of you, that we're not only on board with that, we're champions of that.
Wow. You talk about speaking some truth. Holy smokes. Pete Buttigieg is giving the Democrat the playbook for them to be very successful politically. He is giving them the playbook to be very successful electorally in regards to winning political office. I strongly, if Pete Buttigieg stays on this thread, which, who knows, he may fall off it. He may be browbeaten by the progressive left off of it. But if he stays on this thread, and this is his message, this guy, to me, is the front runner for Democrats in 2028. You talk about a message that will resonate with the American people, calling out the freakish left for all of their little subsets, all of their little groups that they constantly pander to. That's a winning message for the left. And what he describes, this pandering to these small groups, is why the Democrats are so unpopular right now. It's precisely the issue that they face in regards to winning the popularity contest, which is what elections are. When you boil down elections, which are incredibly complicated, I'm not going to sit here and say that they're not. But when you boil down elections to what they are at the root, it's very simple. It is a popularity contest. Which ideas are more popular? Which candidate is more popular? That's what an election is. And Democrats have been losing that popularity contest because their ideas, their platform is not popular. It is interwoven with all of this weirdo leftist crap that is very unpopular to the American people. They are pandering so hard to these subsets. By the way, this is the animal that the monster that they have created. Right? They have told these groups, yell and scream and be belligerent about your issues until somebody takes you serious. And the Democrats have been the ones taking them serious. And it has led them to, I believe, truly kind of a fork in the road, where they have to decide which way are we going. Do we go right and continue to pander to all of these crazy groups with very politically unpopular ideas? Or do we take a left-hand turn and say, yes, we care about your issues, but we're not going to pander to it. We're going to bring forward a broader message that is not immediately tailored to your little need or want. Buttigieg is absolutely onto something right there. I think he was an awful transportation secretary. Every time there was an issue, he was out of the country on vacation or was just seemingly never around when anything bad was happening. Train derailments, port backups. He was just MIA. So he didn't do a good job in that at all. But he's right about this. He is absolutely 100% spot on about what the Democrats need to do going forward. Very, very interesting. And again, you've got this kind of fracturing happening within the Democrat Party right now. You've got individuals like Adam Schiff, who are yelling from the rooftops about Kash Patel and the FBI and evil happening in this building, Senator Whitehouse, a bunch of just stupid nonsense. And you've got Pete Buttigieg saying, hey, we kind of need to stop with this ridiculous political pandering. We've got to do things that get back to American ideals and beliefs. And so we'll see if the Democrats watch his clip and take any of what he's saying to heart, or do they just attack him and claim that he's too radical or something like that. It'll be interesting to see. In wrapping up our show on this Friday morning, there's been a lot of discussion about the unelected members of the Trump administration. You've heard, seen, covered that protest yesterday in Austin, Texas, about how Trump and Elon Musk are the unelected individuals. Elon Musk's unelected. He shouldn't be allowed to do this. And he's unelected. He's unelected. He's unelected. There was a question at the White House press briefing yesterday. The Deputy Chief of Staff, Stephen Miller, was asked about these unelected people within the administration and gave, I thought, a pretty concise civics lesson. A phenomenal clip from Stephen Miller. Take a listen to this.
It is true that many of the people in this room for 4 years failed to cover the fact that Joe Biden was mentally incompetent and was not running the country. It is also true that many people in this room who have used this talking point that Elon is not elected, fail to understand how government works. So I'm glad for the opportunity for a brief civics lesson. A president is elected by the whole American people. He's the only official in the entire government that is elected by the entire nation, right? Judges are appointed, members of Congress are elected at the district or state level. Just one man. And the Constitution, Article 2, has a clause known as the vesting clause, and it says the executive power shall be vested in a president. Singular. The whole will of democracy is imbued into the elected president. That president then appoints staff to then impose that democratic will onto the government. The threat to democracy, indeed the existential threat to democracy, is the unelected bureaucracy of lifetime tenured civil servants who believe they answer to no one, who believe they can do whatever they want without consequence, who believe they can set their own agenda no matter what Americans vote for. So Americans vote for radical FBI reform, and FBI agents say they don't want to change. Or Americans vote for radical reform on our energy policies, but EPA bureaucrats say they don't want to change. Or Americans vote to end DEI, racist DEI policies, and lawyers of the Department of Justice say they don't want to change. What President Trump is doing is he is removing federal bureaucrats who are defying democracy by failing to implement his lawful orders, which are the will of the whole American people.
Bravo, Stephen Miller. Bravo. This whole idea that Elon Musk, he's unelected. What a ridiculously stupid thing for the left to run on. We didn't elect Elon Musk. Yes, we're fully aware he was not running for president. You know, as Stephen Miller noted, the only person that you elect countrywide is the president. And he surrounds himself with individuals to carry out his agenda. The same way that it has happened for the entirety of this American experiment. You surround yourself with individuals that are going to push your agenda forward. Democrats do it. Republicans do it. There's no issue with it at all, regardless of the political party. Now, the Democrats hate Elon Musk. They despise the fact that he is tearing up their ridiculous radical policies within these administrations, as Stephen Miller pointed out. The president says and the American people say, we don't want these things. And bureaucrats within these agencies, whether it's, as he noted, FBI or EPA, whatever, they decide, well, we don't want to do things that way. We want to keep things the way that it was. Keep things the way that it's always been, right? Because that's how we operate as the federal government. We always do it like that. So now Trump is putting in people that say, no, that is no longer a valid excuse. We're changing. We're carrying out the will of the American people. All of these left-wing institutions that wield ungodly amounts of power are being dismantled. All of these left-wing institutions are being gutted and stripped. And that's where the Democrats hold a lot of their power. It's where they're able to be so effective in pushing their far-left progressive agenda forward. Trump and Elon Musk and other folks within the administration are shaking that up. They're dismantling that. And now you're seeing the Democrats' response to it, claiming that Elon Musk is unelected, we didn't vote for him, he shouldn't be there, it's unconstitutional. Claiming that Trump is an authoritarian, Republicans are authoritarians. They're losing all their toys. They're losing all their political power within these bureaucrats installed in these agencies. I am all for it. The American people are all for it. Great civics lesson there from Stephen Miller. I'll have the link to that in the show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Well, that's going to do it for a Friday edition of The Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and available wherever you get your podcasts. Hopefully you have a great weekend. Coming up Monday morning, we will dig into property reevaluations in New Hanover County. An interesting discussion on that and more. Have a great weekend. We're back with you Monday morning right here on The Nick Craig Show.